Does he sleep? She nods toward the master bedroom door. Anatoly opens the door and marches inside. Alessia stands in the hallway, frozen with panic. Can she escape? But he returns moments later, holding the small wastebasket.
And this? He growls.
Alessia manages to mobilize her features and screws her nose up in disgust at the condom in the trash. She shrugs, trying desperately for nonchalance.
He has a girlfriend. They are out at the moment.
He puts the basket down, seemingly satisfied with her answer.
Get your things. I am parked outside.
She stands motionless, her heart racing.
Go, now. I don't want to wait for him to return. I don't want a scene.
He undoes his coat, slips his hand inside his jacket, and pulls out a pistol.
I am serious.
Alessia blanches at the sight of the gun, and her breathing shallows with panic. He'll kill Maxim, of that she has no doubt. Her head begins to swim. Silently, she begs her grandmother's god to keep Maxim away.
I came here to rescue you. I don't know why you are here. We can talk about that later. But right now, I want you to pack your things. We are leaving.
Her fate is sealed. She will go with Anatoly. She must, to protect the man she loves. She has no choice. How did she think she could escape her father's Beza? Tears of helpless anger pool in Alessia's eyes as she heads into the spare bedroom. She packs quietly and efficiently, her hands shaking as rage and terror war within her. She wants to go before Maxim returns. She has to protect him. Anatoly appears on the threshold. His eyes sweep over her and the empty room.
You look very different. Western. I like it.
Alessia says nothing as she zips up the duffel, but for some reason she's grateful she's still wearing her coat.
I don't know why you are crying.
He sounds genuinely perplexed.
I like England. I would like to stay. I have been happy here. You have had your fun. It is time to come home and accept your responsibilities, Carissima.
Slipping the gun into his overcoat pocket, he grabs her bag.
I have to leave a note, she blurts. Why? Because it is the right thing to do. My employer will worry. He has been good to me.
She almost chokes on her words. Anatoly gazes at her, and she has no idea what he's thinking. Perhaps he's weighing what she said.
Okay, he says, eventually.
He follows her into the kitchen, where a notepad and pen lie beside the phone. Alessia scribbles quickly, careful with her choice of words, hoping desperately that Maxim will read between them. She doesn't know how well Anatoly speaks or reads English. She cannot take the chance. She cannot write what she really wants to say.
Thank you for protecting me. Thank you for showing me what love means. But I cannot escape my destiny. I love you. I will always love you until the day I die. Maxim, my love. What does it say?
She shows him and watches as his eyes scan the words. He nods.
Good, let's go.
She lays her new keys on top of the note. They'd been hers for only a few precious hours.
It's a still, cold night, and frost is beginning to form, sparkling ice white under the light from the street lamps. When I turn the corner, the road is quiet, except in the distance a man is closing the door of a black Mercedes S-Class that's parked in front of my building.
Maxim!
I turn to see Caroline running down the street toward me. Caroline? What on earth? But something about the man with the Mercedes pulls my attention back. The scene is odd, because he's walking around to the near side of the car. It's wrong. I'm missing something. My senses are suddenly on high alert. I can hear the crisp clip of Caroline's heels as she gets closer. I can smell winter and the Thames on the chilly breeze, and I strain my eyes to stare at the license number of the car. Even from this distance, I can tell that it has foreign plates. The man opens what must be the driver's door. Maxim! Caroline calls again. I turn, and she runs up to me and throws her arms around my neck with such force that I have to put my arms around her to balance us both and stop us from falling to the ground. I'm so sorry, she sobs. I say nothing as my focus is drawn back to the car. The driver climbs in and slams the door while Caroline offers more apologies. But I ignore her as the indicator light starts blinking and the car pulls away from the curb into the light of a street lamp. And then I see it. The small red and black flag of Albania on the number plate.
Alessia hears Maxim's name shouted down the street. She turns around in the passenger seat as Anatoly opens his door. Maxim is standing at the end of the block, and a fair-haired woman runs into his arms, hugging him. Who is she? He cradles her head. No! He holds her waist. And she remembers the woman wearing his shirt standing in his kitchen. Alessia, this is my friend and sister-in-law, Caroline. Anatoly slams the door shut, making Alessia jump and forcing her to look ahead. His sister-in-law? His married sister-in-law? And his brother is dead. Caroline is his widow. Alessia chokes back a sob. This is where he has been, with Caroline. And now they are hugging in the street and he's holding her. The betrayal is swift and cruel, slicing Alessia into tiny pieces and shattering her faith in herself and in him. Him. Her mister. A tear oozes down her cheek as Anatoly starts the engine. Smoothly, he maneuvers the car out of the parking space and drives away from the only happiness Alessia has ever known.
Fuck! I shout as dread spawns dark and deadly in my gut. Caroline startles. What is it? Alessia! Abandoning Caroline, I race up the street, only to see the car disappear into the distance. Shit! 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 Not again! I grab my hair with both hands, helpless, completely helpless. Maxim, what is it? Caroline is now standing beside me outside the entrance to my building. They've got her! I fumble for my keys to open the front door. Who? What are you talking about? Alessia! I crash through the front door and don't bother with the lift. Leaving Caroline at the foot of the stairs, I race up all six flights to my flat. When I unlock the door, the alarm starts beeping, confirming the worst of my fears. Alessia is not here. I silence the alarm and listen, hoping beyond hope that I have this wrong. Of course, I hear nothing except the wind rattling the skylight in the hallway and my blood pulsing through my ears. Frantically, I start running through each room, my imagination shifting into overdrive. They have her. They have her again. My sweet, brave woman. What will those monsters do to her? Her clothes are not in my bedroom, nor the spare room. In the kitchen, I find her keys and the note. Mr. Maxim. My betrothed is here and he is taking me to my home in Albania. Thank you for everything, Alessia. No! I scream, overwhelmed by my despair. Picking up the phone, I hurl it at the wall. It shatters into pieces as I sink to the floor, my head in my hands. For the second time in less than a week, I want to cry. Chapter 28. Maxim, what the fuck is going on? I take my head out of my hands, and Caroline is standing at the doorway. She looks windswept and unkempt, but calmer than she did a few minutes ago. He's taken her. My voice is hoarse as I struggle to control my rage and despair. Who has? Her fiancé. Alessia has a fiancé? It's complicated. She folds her arms and frowns with what seems like genuine concern. You look shattered. I turn blazing eyes at her. I am. Slowly I get to my feet. I think the woman I want to marry has just been kidnapped. Marry? Caroline blanches. Yes, fucking marry! My voice booms off the walls, and we glare at each other, the words hanging between us, ripe with regret and recrimination. Caroline closes her eyes and tucks her hair behind her ear. When she opens them, they are steely blue with resolve. "Well, you'd better go after her then," she says.
Alessia stares, unseeing, out the car window, drowning in tears she cannot stop. They flow freely as grief shrouds her misery. Maxim and Caroline. Caroline and Maxim. Was what she experienced with him all a lie? No, she can't bring herself to think that. He said he loved her, and she had believed him. She still wants to believe him, but of course it doesn't matter anymore. She'll never see him again.
"Why are you crying?"
Anatoly asks, but she ignores him. She doesn't care what he does to her now. Her heart is in shreds, and she knows that it will never heal. He switches on the radio, and an upbeat pop song blasts over the speakers, jarring Alessia's nerves. She suspects he's done it to distract himself from her silent sobbing. Anatoly turns the volume down and hands her a box of tissues.
"Here, dry your eyes. Enough of this nonsense, or I'll give you something to cry about."
She takes out a wad of tissues and continues to stare listlessly out the window. She can't even bring herself to look at him. She knows that she will die at his hands, and there's nothing she can do. Maybe she can escape. In Europe, maybe she can choose how she dies. She closes her eyes and drifts into her own version of hell.
"Go after her," I ask, my mind racing. "Yes," Caroline is emphatic. "But I have to ask, what makes you think she's been kidnapped?" Her note. "Note? Here." I hand her the crumpled piece of paper and turn away, rubbing my face, trying to gather my splintered thoughts. Where will he take her? Did she go willingly? No, she only had revulsion for him. He tried to break her fucking fingers. He must have forced her to go. How the hell did he find her? "Maxim, this note doesn't read like she's been kidnapped. Have you thought that maybe she's decided to go home?" "Caro, she did not leave of her own free will. Trust me." I have to get her back. Fuck. I storm past Caroline and head into my drawing room. Fucking hell! What now? I don't have a working fucking computer!
"I need your passport," Anatoly says as they speed through London's streets. "What?"
"We are driving to the Eurotunnel train. I need your passport."
"Eurotunnel? No." Alessia swallows. This is real. It's happening. He's taking her back to Albania. "I don't have a passport."
"What do you mean you don't have a passport?"
Alessia stares at him.
"Why, Alessia, tell me. Did you forget to pack it? I don't understand."
He frowns. "I was smuggled into this country by some men who took my passport."
"Smuggled? Men?"
His jaw clenches and a muscle twitches in his cheek.
"What is going on?"
She's too tired and too broken to explain.
"I don't have a passport." "Fucking hell."
Anatoly smacks the steering wheel with his palm. Alessia flinches at the sound.
"Alessia, wake up."
Something has changed. Alessia is confused.
"Maxim?"
She opens her eyes and her heart sinks further into hell. She's with Anatoly, and the car is at a standstill, parked on the side of the road. It's dark, but by the glow of the headlights, she can tell they're on a country road surrounded by frosted fields.
"Get out of the car," he says.
Alessia stares at him, and a small blossom of hope flowers in her chest. He's going to leave her here. She can walk back. She's done it once before.
"Out,"
he says more forcefully. He opens his car door, climbs out, and comes around to her door, opening it wide. Taking her hand, he hauls her out of her seat and leads her to the back of the car, where he opens the trunk. It's empty, but for a small rolling suitcase and her duffel.
You'll have to get in here.
What? No!
We have no choice. You don't have a passport. Get in.
Please, Anatoly, I hate the dark. Please.
He frowns. Get in or I'll put you in.
Anatoly, please, no, I don't like the dark.
He moves quickly, picking her up, dumping her in the trunk, and slamming the lid shut before Alessia can fight back.
No!
She shouts. It's pitch dark inside. She starts to kick and scream as the darkness bleeds into her lungs, suffocating her like the black plastic bag from the last time she crossed the channel. She can't breathe. She can't breathe. She screams.
Not the dark. No, not the dark. I hate the dark.
Seconds later, the lid pops open and a blinding light shines in her face. She blinks.
Here, take this.
Anatoly hands her a flashlight.
I don't know how long the battery will last, but we have no choice. Once we are on the train, I can open the trunk.
Stunned, Alessia takes the flashlight and holds it protectively to her chest. He moves her bag so that she can use it as a pillow, then shuffles out of his overcoat and lays it over her.
You may get cold. I don't know if the heating works in here. Go back to sleep. And be quiet.
He gives her a stern look and shuts the trunk once more. Alessia clutches the light and scrunches up her eyes, trying to regulate her breathing as the car starts to move. In her head, she begins to play Bach's Prelude No. 6 in D minor on repeat, the colors flashing brilliant hues of bright blue and turquoise in her mind, her fingers flexing, tapping out each note on the flashlight. Alessia is shaken awake. She looks sleepily up at Anatoly, who towers over her as he holds open the lid of the trunk. His breath is a foggy cloud around him, lit by a solitary light from the parking lot. His face is stark and ashen.
What took you so long to wake up? I thought you were unconscious.
He sounds relieved.
Relieved? We're going to stay the night here, he says.
Alessia blinks, huddling down into the coat. It's cold. Her head is fuzzy from crying, her eyes are swollen, and she doesn't want to spend the night with him.
Out,
he snaps, and extends his hand. Sighing, Alessia sits up. The cold wind whips around her, blowing her hair across her face. Stiffly, she clambers out of the car, refusing Anatoly's help. She doesn't want his hands on her. He reaches past her for his coat, which he shuffles on. He grabs his case and hands her the duffel containing her clothes before shutting the trunk. The parking lot is deserted, except for two other cars. Not far away stands a squat, nondescript building that Alessia assumes is a hotel.
Follow me.
He walks briskly toward the entrance. Alessia quietly sets her bag on the ground, turns, and runs.
I stare at the ceiling, my mind churning through all the plans I've put in place since Alessia was taken. Tomorrow I'll fly to Albania, and Tom Alexander will accompany me. Annoyingly, it's too short notice for a private jet, so we're flying commercial. Thanks to Magda, we have the address of Alessia's parents. It's also thanks to Magda that Alessia's fiancé found her. I don't dwell on this tidbit of information, because it makes me incandescent with fury. Calm down, mate. We'll pick up a car, drive to Tirana, and overnight there at the Plaza Hotel. Tom has arranged for us to meet up with a translator who will come with us to Kukës the following day. And we'll stay there for however long it takes. We'll wait for Alessia and her kidnapper. Not for the first time this evening, I wish I'd bought her that phone. It's so frustrating not being able to contact her. I hope she's okay. I close my eyes, imagining horrible scenarios. My sweet girl. My sweet, sweet Alessia. I'm coming to get you. I've got you. I love you.
Alessia flees blindly into the dark, fueled by her adrenaline rush. She's running over the asphalt, then onto rough grass. Behind her, she hears a shout. It's him. She hears his footsteps pounding on the frozen ground, getting closer, closer still, then silence. He's on the grass.
No.
She pushes herself harder, hoping that her feet will carry her away from him, but he grabs her, and she's falling, falling, tackled to the ground so forcefully that she scrapes her face on the frosted grass. Anatoly lies on top of her back, panting heavily.
You stupid bitch. Where the hell do you think you're going to go at this time?
He hisses in her ear. He kneels up and drags her over until she's lying on her back, then sits astride her. He slaps her hard across her face, snapping her head to the side. He leans down over her, puts his hand on her throat, and squeezes. He's going to kill her. She doesn't struggle. She stares at him, her eyes on his. In their frigid blue, she sees the darkness of his heart, his hate, his anger, his inadequacy. His hand tightens, and he's choking the life from her. Her head begins to swim. She reaches up and clutches his arm.
This is how I'm going to die.
She sees her end, here, somewhere in France, at the hands of this violent man. She wants it. She welcomes it. She doesn't want to live a life in fear like her mother.
Kill me, she mouths.
Anatoly growls something incomprehensible and lets go. Alessia takes a huge breath and puts her hands up to her throat, coughing and spluttering, her body overruling her, fighting for life, sucking in precious air and reviving her. She gasps.
This is why I don't want to marry you.
Her voice is husky and small, forcing sound through her bruised larynx. Anatoly grabs her jaw and looms over her, his face close enough for her to feel his warm breath on her cheek.
A woman is a sack made to endure, he snarls, with a cruel glint in his eye.
Alessia gazes at him as hot tears scald the sides of her face and pool in her ears. She hadn't been aware that she was crying. He is quoting from the ancient Canon of Lek Dukagini, the primitive feudal code that governed the mountain tribes in the north and east of her country for centuries. Its legacy lingers. Anatoly sits back.
I would be better off dead than with you.
Her voice is emotionless. He frowns, nonplussed.
Don't be ridiculous.
He slowly rises, standing over her.
Get up.
Alessia coughs once more and staggers painfully to her feet. He clasps her elbow and marches her back to where her abandoned bag sits in the parking lot. He picks it up and grabs his own suitcase several steps farther on. He makes short work of checking in. Alessia hangs back while he hands over his passport and credit card. Anatoly speaks fluent French. She's too weary and too sore to be surprised. Their Spartan suite has two main rooms. The living room has dark gray furniture and a small kitchenette to the side. The wall behind the sofa is painted in cheerful, mismatched stripes. Through the open door beyond, Alessia spies two double beds. She breathes a sigh of relief. Two beds, not one, two. Anatoly dumps her duffel on the floor, shoves off his coat, and throws it on the sofa. Alessia watches him, listening to the thud of her pulse thrumming in her ears. In the silence of the room, it's deafening.
What now? What will he do?
Your face is a mess. Go and clean yourself up.
Anatoly points to the bathroom.
And whose fault is that?
Alessia snaps. He glowers at her, and for the first time she notices his red-rimmed eyes and his pale complexion. He looks exhausted.
Just do it.
He even sounds exhausted. She heads into the bedroom, then the bathroom, slamming the door with such force that the loud bang makes her jump. The bathroom is small and dingy, but in the insipid glow of the light above the mirror, Alessia sees her reflection and gasps. One side of her face is red from his slap, and on the other, there's a graze on her cheekbone from where she hit the ground. Around her throat, there are vivid red marks in the shape of his fingers. Tomorrow, they will be bruises. But what shocks her most is the lifeless eyes staring back at her from beneath swollen lids. She is dead already. With swift automatic movements, she washes her face, wincing as the soapy water touches the scrape. She pats herself dry with a towel. When she re-enters the living room, Anatoly has hung up his jacket and is searching through the minibar.
"Are you hungry?"
he asks. She shakes her head. He pours himself a drink, scotch, she thinks, and downs the entire glass in one gulp, closing his eyes to savor the taste. When he opens them again, he seems calmer.
"Take off your coat."
Alessia doesn't move. He pinches the bridge of his nose.
"Alessia, I do not want to fight with you. I am tired. It's warm in here. Tomorrow we will go back out into the cold. Please take your coat off."
Reluctantly, she removes her coat as Anatoly stares at her, making her feel self-conscious.
"I like you in jeans," he says,
but Alessia can't look at him. She feels like a prize sheep on the auction block as he appraises her. She hears the rattle of bottles, but this time Anatoly produces a Perrier out of the fridge.
"Here, you must be thirsty."
He pours it into a glass and offers it to her. After a moment's hesitation, she takes it and drinks.
"It's almost midnight. We should sleep."
Her eyes meet his, and he smirks.
"Ah, carissima. I should make you mine after the stunt you pulled outside."
He reaches for her chin, and she flinches as his fingers graze her skin.
"Don't touch me." "You are so beautiful," he murmurs,
as if he's speaking only to himself.
"But I don't have the energy to fight you. And I think it would be a fight, yes?"
She closes her eyes, battling a wave of revulsion that unsettles her stomach. Anatoly chuckles, and his lips caress her forehead in a soft kiss.
"You will grow to love me,"
he whispers. He picks up their bags and takes them into the bedroom.
"Never."
The man is delusional. Her heart belongs to another. It will always belong to Maxim.
"Go and change into your night clothes," he says.
She shakes her head.
"I will sleep like this."
She doesn't trust him. Anatoly cocks his head, his expression severe.
"No. Take your clothes off. You won't run if you're naked."
"No."
She crosses her arms. "No, you won't run, or no, you won't take your clothes off?"
"Both." He exhales, frustrated and tired.
"I don't believe you. But I also don't understand why you're running." "Because you are an angry, violent man, Anatoly. Why would I want to spend my life with you?"
Her voice holds no emotion. He shrugs.
"I don't have the energy for this conversation. Get into bed."
Seizing the moment, in case he changes his mind, she scuttles into the bedroom. There she slips off her boots and huddles on top of the bed, farther away, turning her back on him. She listens as he moves around the room, undressing and folding his clothes. Her anxiety mounts with each movement and with each sound. After an eternity, the soft slap of his footsteps pad on the floor as he approaches her bed. He stands beside her, his breathing shallow, and she feels his eyes on her, everywhere. She squeezes hers shut, pretending to sleep. He tuts, and she hears the rustle of sheets and blankets, and to her surprise, he drapes a blanket over her. He switches off the light, plunging the room into darkness, and the bed dips as he lies down.
"No, he should be in the other bed."
She stiffens, but he's beneath the covers while she's on top. He puts his arm around her and shuffles closer.
"I will know if you leave the bed,"
he says, and he kisses her hair. She recoils and clutches her little gold cross. Soon his even breathing tells her that he's asleep. Alessia stares into the darkness she fears and wishes it would swallow her up. Her tears refuse to fall. She's all cried out.
"What is Maxim doing?
Is he missing me?
Is he with Caroline?"
She sees Caroline in Maxim's arms as he holds her close, and Alessia wants to scream. Alessia is too warm, and someone is murmuring in the background. She cracks one eye open momentarily, bewildered as to where she might be. No, no, no. A wash of fear and despair fills her with anguish when she remembers. Anatoly. He's on the phone in the other room. Alessia sits up and listens.
She's okay. No, far from it. She's reluctant to return home. I don't understand it.
He's talking to someone in Albanian, and he sounds confused and upset.
I don't know. Maybe. There was a man, her employer, the one who was mentioned in the email.
He's talking about Maxim.
She says she is just his cleaner, but I don't know, Yak.
Yak, he's talking to my father.
I love her so much. She's so beautiful.
What? He doesn't know the meaning of the word love.
She hasn't told me yet, but I want to know, too. Why would she leave?
His voice cracks. He's emotional.
I left because of you.
She left to get as far away from him as she could.
Yes, I will bring her back to you. I will make sure she's unharmed.
Alessia places her hands on her still tender throat.
What the hell?
Unharmed?
He's a liar.
She's safe with me.
Ha! Alessia almost wants to laugh at the supreme irony of that statement.
Tomorrow night. Yes. Goodbye.
She hears him move about the room, and suddenly he appears at the door, wearing only his pants and an undershirt.
You're awake, he says. Sadly, it would appear so.
He gives her an odd look and chooses to ignore her comment.
There is some breakfast for you out here.
I'm not hungry.
Alessia feels reckless and bold. She doesn't care anymore. Now that Maxim is out of harm's way, she can behave as she wishes. Anatoly rubs his chin and regards her thoughtfully.
Suit yourself, he says.
We leave in 20 minutes. We have a long way to go.
I'm not going with you.
He rolls his eyes.
Carissima, you have no choice. Don't make this painful for both of us. Don't you want to see your father and mother?
Mama.
His eyebrows rise a fraction. He's noticed the chink in her armor, and sensing victory, swoops in for the kill.
She misses you.
She rises out of bed and sullenly grabs her bag, and skirting him as widely as she can, heads into the bathroom to wash and change. Under the shower, an idea begins to form in her head. She has her money. Maybe she should return to Albania. She can get a new passport and a visa and return to England.
Maybe I should stay alive.
And as she briskly towel dries her hair, she feels a new sense of purpose.
She will get back to Maxim and see for herself. See if everything they shared was a lie.
Chapter 29. Alessia dozes in the front seat. They are on an autobahn traveling way too fast. They've been driving for hours, through France, through Belgium, and she thinks they're now somewhere in Germany. It's a cold, wet winter day, and the landscape is flat and bleak, reflecting Alessia's mood. No, she feels more than bleak. She's desolate. Anatoly seems grimly determined to get to Albania as fast as possible. At the moment, he's listening to a German talk show on the radio, which Alessia doesn't understand. The monotony of the voices, the constant rumble of road noise, and the dreary countryside are all dulling her senses. Sleep is what she wants. When she's asleep, her anguish is a low hum, like static on the radio. It's not the searing pain that tears at her heart when she's conscious. She turns her mind to Maxim, and the pain amplifies.
Stop. It's too much.
She looks through tired eyes at her betrothed, studying him. His face is hardened in concentration as the Mercedes eats up the miles. His complexion is fair, betraying his northern Italian roots, his nose straight, his lips full, and his blonde hair, uncommon in her town, is long and unkempt. Alessia can look at him dispassionately and judge him to be a handsome man, but those lips have a cruel twist to them, and those eyes are piercing and cold when he's glaring at her. She remembers when she first met him, how charming he'd been. Her father had told her that Anatoly was an international businessman. During that first meeting, he'd seemed so dashing and knowledgeable. He was well-traveled, and she'd listened rapt to his stories of Croatia, Italy, and Greece, these faraway places. She'd been shy, but pleased that her father had selected such an erudite man for her. Little had she known. After she had met him a few times, she started to see flashes of the man he really was. His irrational anger at the local children who'd surrounded his car out of curious wonder when he came to visit, his temper when arguing with her father about politics, and his sly admiration when her father scolded her mother for spilling some raki. The signs were there, and he'd rebuked Alessia a few times too, but his true nature had been constrained by social etiquette. It was at a local dignitary's wedding, where Alessia was playing the piano, that Anatoly finally revealed his dark side. Two young men, whom she had known at school, lingered when she finished playing. They flirted with her until Anatoly managed to usher her into a side room, away from them and the festivities. Alessia, secretly thrilled, had thought he wanted to steal a kiss, since it was the first time they'd been alone together. But no, Anatoly was furious. He slapped her hard across her face, twice. It was a shock, even though living with her father had prepared her for physical anger. The second time it happened, she was at the school. A young man came to ask her a couple of questions after her recital. Anatoly chased him away and dragged her into the cloakroom. There he hit her a couple of times and grabbed her hands and pulled back her fingers and threatened to break them if he ever caught her flirting again. She'd begged him to stop, and mercifully he had, but he'd pushed her to the floor and left her sobbing in that room, alone. That first time, she kept his attack a secret. She excused it. It was a one-off. She had misbehaved. She had encouraged the young men by smiling at them. The second time, Alessia was devastated. She'd thought that maybe she could break the cycle of violence that beset her mother, but it was her mother who'd found her while she lay curled up, sobbing and trembling, on the floor. "I don't want you to go through your life with a violent man." They'd wept together, and her mother had taken action. But it was all for naught. Now here she is, with him. Anatoly gives her a sideways look. "What is it?" Alessia averts her eyes, ignoring him, and stares out the window. "We should stop. I'm hungry, and you've not eaten," he says. She continues to ignore him, though hunger claws at her stomach, reminding her of her six-day walk to Brentford. "Alessia," he barks, making her jump. She turns to him. "What?" "I'm talking to you." She shrugs. "You've kidnapped me. I don't want to be with you, and you expect conversation?" "I didn't know you could be this disagreeable," Anatoly mutters. "I'm just getting started." Anatoly's mouth twitches, and to her surprise, he seems amused. "I can say this about you, Carissima. You are not boring." He flicks the turn signal, and they pull off the autobahn into a service area. "There is a cafe here. Let's get something to eat." Anatoly places a tray bearing a black coffee, several sachets of sugar, a bottle of water, and a cheese baguette in front of her.
"I cannot believe I am serving you," he utters as he sits. "Eat."
"Welcome to the 21st century," Alessia retorts, folding her arms in an act of defiance. His jaw hardens. "I will not tell you again."
Oh, do your worst, Anatoly. I am not eating. You bought it, you eat it, she snaps, ignoring her growling stomach. His eyes flare in surprise, but he presses his full lips together, and Alessia suspects he's trying not to smile. He sighs, reaches over, picks up her baguette, and takes a theatrically large bite out of it. With his mouth full, he looks both absurd and ridiculously pleased with himself, so much so that an involuntary snicker escapes from Alessia. Anatoly smiles, a proper smile that travels all the way to his eyes. They regard her warmly, and he no longer tries to hide his amusement.
Here,
he says, and he hands her the remaining part of the baguette. Her stomach chooses this moment to rumble, and when he hears it, his smile broadens. She eyes the baguette and him and sighs. She's so hungry. Against her better judgment, she takes it from him and begins to eat.
That's better,
he says, and starts on his own meal.
Where are we?
Alessia asks after a few bites.
We've just passed Frankfurt.
When will we reach Albania?
Tomorrow. I hope to be home by tomorrow afternoon.
They eat the rest of their food in silence.
Finish up. I want to get going. Do you need to use the restroom?
Anatoly stands over her, keen to move on. Alessia takes her coffee without adding sugar.
Like Maxim.
It's bitter, but she downs it anyway and grabs her water bottle. The service station, with its large parking lot and smell of diesel fumes, is hauntingly familiar and reminiscent of the journey she made with Maxim. But the difference is, she wanted to be with Maxim. Alessia's heart aches. She is getting farther and farther away from him.
I'm sitting in the British Airways business class lounge at Gatwick Airport, waiting for the afternoon flight to Tirana. Tom is leafing through the Times and sipping a glass of champagne while I'm brooding. I've been in a state of high anxiety since Alessia was taken from me. Maybe she went with him willingly. Maybe she's changed her mind about us. I don't want to believe that, but doubt is creeping into my mind. It's insidious. If that's what's happened, at least I'll get to confront her about her change of heart. To distract myself from my unsettling thoughts, I snap and upload a few photos to my Instagram. Once that's done, I think back over the morning's events. First, I'd bought Alessia a phone, which is now in my backpack. I'd met with Oliver and gone through a quick agenda of all estate business. To my relief, everything seemed to be running just fine. I'd signed the papers required by the Crown Office for my inclusion onto the roll of the peerage, with Mr. Raja, my solicitor, acting as my witness. I'd given both men a redacted version of the weekend's events with Alessia, and asked Raja to recommend a lawyer specializing in immigration services so we could begin the process of securing some kind of visa for Alessia to be in the UK. Afterward, on a whim, I'd visited my bank in Belgravia, where the Trevethick collection is secured. If I find Alessia and all is not lost, I will ask her to marry me. Over the centuries, my ancestors have amassed quite a haul of fine jewelry, crafted by the most prominent artisans of their day. When the collection is not on loan to museums around the world, it is safely stored in the bowels of Belgravia. I needed a ring, one that would do justice to Alessia's beauty and talent. There were two in the collection that might have been suitable, but I chose the 1930s Cartier platinum and diamond ring that my grandfather, Hugh Trevelyan, bestowed on my grandmother, Allegra, in 1935. It's an exquisite, simple and elegant ring, 2.79 carats, and currently valued at £45,000. I hope Alessia likes it. If all goes to plan, she'll return to the UK wearing it as my fiancée. I pat my pocket yet again, checking that the ring is safe, and scowl at Tom, who's stuffing his face with nuts. He looks up.
Hang in there, Trevethick. I can tell you're fretting. She'll be fine. We'll rescue the girl.
He'd insisted on accompanying me when I called him and told him what had happened. He's left one of his guys to keep watch on Magda, and he's here with me. Tom loves an adventure. It's why, back in the day, he joined the army. He's up on his metaphorical white charger, ready for the fray. I hope so, I answer. Will Alessia see us that way? As rescuers? Not as an inconvenience? I don't know. I'm itching to get on the plane and get to her parents' home. I have no idea what I'll find there, but I hope I find my girl.
Why did you leave Albania? Anatoly asks when they're back on the Autobahn. His voice is soft, and Alessia wonders if he's trying to lull her into a false sense of security. She's not that stupid.
You know why. I've told you.
Though as the words leave her mouth, she realizes she doesn't know what story he's been told. Perhaps she can embellish the truth. It might make it easier on her and on her mother. But it depends on what Magda said.
What did my mother's friend say?
Your father intercepted the email. He saw your name and asked me to read it for him.
What did it say?
That you were alive and well and were going away to work for a man.
Is that all?
More or less.
So Magda had not mentioned Dante and Illy.
What did my father say?
He asked me to come get you.
And my mother?
I didn't speak to your mother. This does not concern her.
Of course it concerns her. Stop being prehistoric.
He gives her a sideways look, taken aback by her outburst.
Prehistoric?
Yes, you are a dinosaur. She deserves to be consulted.
Anatoly's puzzled frown speaks volumes. He has no idea what she's talking about. Alessia continues, warming to her subject.
You are a man from another century, from another time. You and all the men like you. In other countries, your Neanderthal attitude to women would be unacceptable.
He shakes his head.
You have been in the West too long, carissima.
I like the West. My grandmother was from England.
Is that why you went to London?
No.
Why then?
Anatoly, you know why. I want to make it clear to you, I don't want to marry you.
You will come around, Alessia.
He waves his hand as if to brush off her rejection as trivial. Alessia huffs, feeling aggrieved, but feeling brave, too. After all, what can he do while he's driving?
I want to choose who I marry. It's a simple enough request.
You would dishonor your father.
Alessia flushes. Of course, her attitude, her defiance, her willfulness brings great shame to her family. She turns back to the window, but in her mind, this conversation is not over. Perhaps she can appeal to her father once more. She allows herself a moment to think about Maxim, and her grief rises, raw and real. Her bravado evaporates, and her mood plummets once more into despair. Her heart is beating, but empty. Will she ever see him again? Somewhere in Austria, Anatoly stops at the services again, but this time only for gas. He insists Alessia accompany him into the store. Reluctantly, she trails after him, oblivious to her surroundings. Back on the Autobahn, he announces,
We'll be in Slovenia soon. When we get to Croatia, you'll need to go into the trunk.
Why?
Because Croatia is not part of the Schengen Agreement, and there's a border.
Alessia blanches. She hates being in the trunk. She loathes the dark.
When we stopped for gas, I bought more batteries for the flashlight.
She glances at Anatoly, and he catches her eye.
I know you don't like it, but it can't be helped.
He turns his attention back to the road.
And it shouldn't be for so long this time. When we stopped in Dunkirk, I thought you were unconscious from carbon monoxide poisoning or something.
He frowns, and if Alessia is not mistaken, she would swear he's concerned. This afternoon at the restaurant, he had regarded her with warmth.
What is it?
He asks, snapping her out of her reverie.
I'm not used to concern from you, she states. Only violence.
Anatoly's hands tighten on the steering wheel.
Alessia, if you don't do as you are told, there are consequences. I expect you to be a traditional gig wife. That's all you need to know. I think you have become too opinionated while you've been in London.
She doesn't answer him, but turns away and stares out at the passing countryside, nursing her misery as they drive on into the afternoon.
Our flight lands in Tirana at 20:45 local time, in pouring, icy rain. Tom and I are traveling with hand baggage only, so we go straight through customs and emerge into a modern, well-lit airport terminal. I don't know what I'd been expecting, but the place looks like any small airport in Europe, with all the facilities one might need. Our rental car, on the other hand, is a revelation. My travel agent had warned me that there were no prestige cars for hire, so I find myself at the wheel of a car whose make I've never heard of, a Dacia. It's the most basic and analog car I've ever driven, though it does have a USB port in the radio so we can plug in my iPhone and use Google Maps. I'm surprised to find myself liking the car. It's practical and sturdy. Tom christens it Dachi, and after some negotiation at the exit to the car park and a small bribe to the parking attendant, we are off. Driving at night, in torrential rain on the wrong side of the road, in a country where private car ownership was unheard of until the mid-1990s, is a challenge. But 40 minutes later, Dachi and Google Maps get us in one piece to the Plaza Hotel in the center of Tirana. Fuck, that was hairy, Tom announces as we pull up in front of the hotel. Damn right. Though I've driven in worse conditions, he mutters. I turn off the ignition, knowing that he's making an oblique reference to his time in Afghanistan. How far did you say this girl's hometown is? Her name's Alessia, I growl for what feels like the 10th time, and wonder about the wisdom of agreeing to let Tom accompany me. I think it's about a 3-hour drive. He's a good man in a pinch, but diplomacy has never been his strong point. Sorry, old man. Alessia. He taps his forehead. I've got it. I hope the rain holds off tomorrow. Let's check in and find somewhere to have a drink.
In the trunk of the Mercedes, Alessia clutches the flashlight as the car lurches to a stop. They must have reached the border with Croatia. She closes her eyes, pulls Anatoly's coat over her head, and switches off the flashlight. She doesn't want to get caught. She just wants to get home. She hears voices. They're quiet and in control. And the car starts to move. She breathes a sigh of relief and flicks on the bright beam once more. She's reminded of the makeshift hideaway beneath the sheets that she shared with Maxim and the little dragon. They were sitting and talking on his vast baronial bed, their knees touching, and her pain is swift and sudden. She aches to the bottom of her soul. Before long, the Mercedes slows and stops. The engine idles, and moments later, Anatoly opens the trunk. Alessia switches off the flashlight and sits up, blinking in the darkness. They are on a deserted rural road. A small bungalow squats darkly opposite them. Anatoly is lit by the car's taillights, his face cast in demonic red, his breath an ominous cloud around him. He offers his hand to help her out, and because she's tired and stiff, she accepts. She stumbles as she steps out of the trunk, and he yanks her forward into his arms.
Why are you so hostile?
He breathes against her temple. Tightening his hold around her waist, he grasps the back of her head with his hand and grips her hair. In spite of the cold, his breath is hot and heavy between them. As Alessia registers what's happening, his lips swoop down hard on hers. He tries to force his tongue into her mouth and she struggles, fear and loathing careening through her body in a potent mix. She pushes ineffectually at his arms and frantically twists, trying to struggle out of his hold. He leans back to look down at her, and before she can stop herself, she slaps him across his face, her palm ringing from the blow, and he retreats, shocked. She's breathing gulps of air, adrenaline coursing through her veins, chasing away her fear and leaving anger in its stead. Anatoly glares at her, rubbing his cheek, and before she can blink, he slaps her hard across her face. Once, twice. Her head jerks from the right to the left, and she staggers at the force of each blow. With little care, he picks her up and drops her back into the trunk so that she hits her shoulder, her backside, and her head. And before she can protest, he slams the lid shut.
"Until you learn to behave and be civil, you can stay in there," he shouts.
Alessia clutches her throbbing head as anger burns in her throat and behind her eyes. This is her life now.
I take a sip of Negroni. Tom and I are in a bar next door to the hotel. It's contemporary, sleek and comfortable, and the staff are friendly and attentive, but not overly so. What's more, they serve a bloody good Negroni.
"I think we fell on our feet with this place," Tom says as he takes another slug of his drink. "I don't know what I was expecting. Goats and wattle and daub shacks, I think."
"Yes, I had the same idea. This place exceeds all expectations." He eyes me speculatively.
"Forgive me, Trevethick, but I have to know. Why are you doing this?"
"What?
Chasing this girl all over Europe. Why?"
"Love," I state, as if it's the most understandable reason in the world.
"Why doesn't he get this?"
"Love?" "Yeah, it's that simple.
For your daily."
I roll my eyes.
"What is it about the fact that Alessia used to clean for me? And still wants to clean for me?
Just deal with it, Tom. I'm going to marry her." He splutters into his drink, spitting red liquid over the table, and I wonder again at the wisdom of bringing him on this journey.
"Steady on, Trevethick. She's a pretty girl from what I remember, but is that wise?"
I shrug. "I love her." He shakes his head, bemused. "Tom, just because you haven't got the nerve to do the decent thing and pop the fucking question to Henrietta, who is a saint to put up with you, don't judge." He frowns, and a pugnacious gleam lights up his eyes.
"Listen, old boy, I wouldn't be doing my duty as a friend if I didn't state the fucking obvious."
"The fucking obvious?"
"You're in mourning, Maxim."
His voice is surprisingly gentle.
"Have you considered that this sudden infatuation is part of your way of dealing with your brother's death?"
"This has nothing to do with Kit. And I'm not fucking infatuated. You don't know her like I do. She's an exceptional woman. And I've known countless women. She's different. She's not bothered by trivial shit. She's smart, funny, courageous. And you should hear her play the piano. She's a fucking genius."
"Really?"
"Yes. This is the real deal. I'm seeing the world in a whole different light since I met her. And questioning my place in it."
"Steady on."
"No, Tom, you steady on. She needs me. It's good to be needed. And I need her."
"But that's no basis for a relationship."
I grit my teeth.
"It's not just that. You've fought for your country. You now run a successful business. What the fuck have I ever done?" "Well, you're about to take your place in the history of the Trevethick family and preserve that legacy for generations to come."
"I know." I sigh. "It's daunting. And I want someone I trust beside me. Someone who loves me. Someone who appreciates me for more than my wealth and title. Is that too much to ask?" He frowns. "You've found that person," I add. "And you take Henrietta for granted." He exhales and stares down at the remains of his drink.
"You're right," he mumbles. "I love Henry. I should do the decent thing."
"You should." He nods.
"Okay.
Let's order another." He signals to the waiter for another round of drinks, and I wonder if I'll have to deal with this level of doubt about Alessia from all my friends. From my family. "Make them doubles," I call.
Alessia wakes and realizes the car has stopped. The engine is off. The lid of the trunk lifts, and Anatoly is standing over her once more.
Maybe you have learned something.